Dein altes Sofa zerfällt langsam und die Black-Friday-Angebote sind wirklich unschlagbar. Aber dein Gehalt kommt erst Anfang des Monats. Kein Problem, mit der PayPal-Bezahlung nach 30 Tagen. So hast du jetzt mehr Spielraum beim Bezahlen und der Betrag wird nach 30 Tagen automatisch und kostenlos von deinem Konto oder deiner Karte abgebucht. Alle Infos auf paypal.de/30 Tage. PayPal es. Vorbehaltlich Kreditwürdigkeitsprüfung verfügbar mit deutschem PayPal-Konto für Einkäufe zwischen 1 und 2.000 Euro.
Stu does America.
We've got a big show for you coming up. Dan Andrews is here for a look at all the Biden filth we're finally removing from our government. We might be on the doorstep of a huge education victory in this country. We'll go over the latest. But we're going to start by doing the craziest Maury Povich episode ever. And there have been some crazy ones, I will say. But I think we're on the verge of maybe the craziest one ever. If you can't remember, maybe you don't remember the Maury show he used to have. He had one thing he was really, really famous for. It was some version of this.
In the case of 2-year-old Darjavian, Tristan, you are not the father.
Very sorry. So, wow, we've, well, our culture has been in an interesting position for quite a long time, in case you were wondering. Okay, the whole, who's the baby's daddy? I'm sure the kid was like, watches that now, it's like, wow, that was, I was really loved. People really, actually, who even knows if it was real? I don't even know if those things were real, but they were kind of a cultural phenomenon, right? And I think we're on the verge of maybe the biggest one ever, and it kind of comes from this arms race we're in the middle of. Which I don't know how closely you've been following, but you're about to get too much information on. OnlyFans model cries after sleeping with 101 men in a day. Sometimes I feel so robotic. Yeah, robotic is one word you could use for it. It's not the one I would think of, but Lily Phillips is her name, and I'm sure her parents are very, very proud. As an OnlyFans model who slept with 101 men in a day breaks down in tears as she recounts her 24-hour sex marathon. Lily Phillips, 23, had sex with over 100 men in a day back in October to create some scandalous content for her subscription-based social media page. But despite previously insisting that she enjoyed the extreme stunt, all that sex didn't make her feel good, huh? Sometimes I feel so robotic, she admitted to YouTuber Josh Peters' documentary, I Slept With 100 Men a Day. We covered this when it happened, and the video is actually really sad. Like, she's obviously destroyed by what she just did and went through. And it, you know, it's the type of thing a lot of people talking about, just, you know, have some self-worth. Just a little bit, you know? I mean, gosh, it's just absolutely terrible. Now, of course, you'd think, like, that's the type of thing that's going to make a society step back and go, wait a minute. You know, she did this thing. It's obviously so central to our awful social media culture, the type of thing that you would only do to get more clicks. It's just revolting. It's all about money and fame and just, our society. And you'd think, okay, well, obviously, we're going to turn against it. Of course not. The exact opposite has happened. Bonnie Blue claims she's broken the world record for sex with 1,057 men in 12 hours. Here she is. This is she's apparently a big OnlyFans. I don't know if it's OnlyFans or she's on one of these services. And wait, we could also just call her a prostitute. That'd be another thing, another term. If you want to go old timey, they say it's the world's oldest profession. But if you put a camera in front of you, it's a job. You're a sex worker. Now, I want you to think about this for a second in the context of the Oscars. We talked about, I don't know if we talked about it on the show or it was radio, but Anora was the one that won. And, it, you know, reportedly, I've not seen the movie, but it reportedly starts with about a 45-minute continuous sex scene. The actress who won Best Actress for the movie, Mikey Madison, she was talking about how she spent 6 months researching the role, which, are you... You're saying you were a hooker for 6 months? Wait, what exactly? I don't know what that means. But she, you know, it can't just be, oh, she made a movie about a sex worker. Her speech was like, oh, we have to make sure that people understand that sex work is real work and all this stuff. And look, I'm sure it's a tough job and not a job I want to do or anyone wants to do with me. But I will say, I don't think we need a cause there. We don't need to legitimize people humping 1,000 times in 12 hours. Also, let's be honest about it. It can't possibly be true, right? Right? Am I wrong on this? Here's the, I mean, again, this is a show that's about statistics. We give you, we break it down numbers-wise. In a statement to Fabulous Online, Bonnie's PR said she slept with 1,057 people. As she hit 1,000, there were still 57 left in the queue who Bonnie wanted to pleasure before ending the 12-hour day. I'm sure it was really pleasurable at that point. There are only 720 minutes in a 12-hour period, meaning if Bonnie's claims are true, she must have allocated less than a minute per person. Now, I mean, I think the most obvious thing here is it isn't true, okay? And there are some thoughts that she's maybe embellished some of her accomplishments, quote unquote, in the past. So maybe not the most trustworthy source. And you might say to yourself, wait a minute, the person who had sex with 1,057 people in 12-hour period isn't trustworthy? Is that possible, Stu? And I have to say, maybe it is. It's just something to consider. All of this is alleged, of course. Now, she did talk about this afterwards. She wasn't nearly as disappointed with her entire existence as the other lady. Here is Bonnie Blue after her routine.
The big 1,000 was completely done. So it started off, I'll give you a bit of an overview. After to start with, it was just like the room was absolutely full. Then we did groups of five, like one after the other of fives. I wanted to give people more time, so then it went down to like one-on-ones, didn't it? So like one person would watch whilst I was with somebody, and then it would literally just be like a rotating circle like that.
That sounds lovely. Also, I will say, and I don't know if this is just me, but there's certain British accents that I just can't understand at all. So I really don't know what she said in that clip. I don't know what it is. It's so strange. I actually could understand the bleeped out words more than the other words, but that's just me. Now, there's good news, everybody. You're going to be surprised to hear, if you know anything about, you know, if you took health class in eighth grade, that experience of having 1,000 different men inside of her may have, we don't know for sure because we don't know when this happened, but may have resulted in a pregnancy. Shocking, isn't it? It is. Bonnie Blue addresses pregnancy rumors. It's stunning. I mean, look, I don't even know if these were protected or not or what the deal with. But, you know, I guess not everything's foolproof. And apparently she's now pregnant. Now, again, I give you the asterisk here. I don't know that we can trust her. I mean, it's a little judgmental, but like certain times, like, you know, I don't know, like, you know, a horrible, murderous dictator, probably don't want them as your babysitter. There's no evidence that they're a bad babysitter, but you kind of would sit back and say, I don't know if I want them watching my kids. You know, just because of this one activity of having sex in about with 1,000 men plus potentially in 12 hours, I just don't know that I trust all of her claims. And that might be a little too judgmental by me, but that's where I'm going. She is addressing this pregnancy now, and here's what she said about it.
In just 8 months' time, I am so excited to do the world's biggest live stream of a birth.
Now, look, I don't think a lot of people want to see her have sex with 1,000 men. I think it sounds pretty icky, but I assure you no one wants to watch a live stream of the birth. That's not a thing. I don't know. I mean, there's weird stuff online, but I don't think that stuff's there. And you might say, okay, why are you telling us any of this? And I think that's a good question, frankly. We're talking about a obviously horrible way to build a family. And I don't even know how big that family would be. Would you have 1,000 different dads? Would you go on Maury Povich and maybe try to figure out who the dad was? That would be highly rated, I suppose. It's a horrible way to conceive a child, a horrible way to go through this. This is, you're going to be surprised to hear, not really all that biblical. It's not the path to a nuclear family that most people would design. And in addition to that, and again, I'm going to be a little judgmental here, I'm not sure that Bonnie Blue or Lily Phillips would be the best mom. And I know I'm being judgmental. Maybe she'd be lovely. But I think that type of circumstance, maybe finding out that that's how you were conceived later in life, might be a little damaging and might be a terrible place. In fact, this could be an absolutely horrible place for a child to grow up. That being said, that child still deserves a chance to live. even a baby conceived in these bizarre and ridiculous circumstances still has value. If Lily Phillips, or actually it's Bonnie Blue or whatever, whichever one is pregnant or supposedly pregnant, goes through with this and gives birth to this child in a very strange roundabout way, she should be commended and has a heck of a lot more moral fortitude than a lot of women who go and abort their child and end their lives for no good freaking reason. You might say, tough circumstance to grow up. Not, I will agree, it's suboptimal. But a lot of people have grown up in suboptimal circumstances and gone on to do great things. Einstein, Tesla, Mandela. How about Frederick Douglass? How about Harriet Tubman? Really bad situations and grew up to do incredible things. But it's not even that. It's not just some achievement they might get at some point. Because honestly, you know, Bob from Little Caesars, who last Thursday delivered your pizza upside down, he also deserved a chance to live. He deserved it. That is the truth. Every single life deserves a chance to live that life. The circumstances of your conception do not add up to the value of your existence. Every single child deserves to live. And honestly, we're at a point where Lily Phillips or Bunny Blue or whatever her name is showing a hell of a lot more on the moral side of things than the entire Democrat Party. Back in a second. All right, let me tell you a story. They were on an RV. Up in Canada when there was a little bit of an ugly turn on the trip. Someone had been hacking up a lung in the backseat, coughing for like a week, getting worse by the day. And he started thinking, this is actually getting a little scary. So this family stopped at a small town ER, only to be told that it would cost $1,000 just to walk in. Any treatment would cost even more than that. The staff suggested waiting until they reached a bigger city for a cheaper option, but they couldn't do that. Those things were getting a little ugly. Instead, though, they decided, wait a minute, let's dig out the Jace case from our luggage. They started a round of azithromycin, I don't know, one of those antibiotics, and it got them through to Calgary, where a doctor added a steroid and crisis averted. This is all because they had the right medication on hand. And of course, you kind of know that, right? A lot of times you go to these urgent cares and they're just like, they're handing you the stuff that you know you're going to wind up taking. Well, now they know, they've learned a lesson. They're never going to travel without a Jace case again. The Jace case is a personalized emergency kit with five life-saving antibiotics that treat the most common and deadly bacterial infections. It's peace of mind in a world where access to care isn't always guaranteed, especially if you're in a place that has universal health care. Go to Jace.com. Jace.com. They've got a big giveaway going on right now. You can check that out. Or just, you know, purchase your own Jace case. The promo code is STU at checkout for a discount. The promo code is STU at Jace.com. Jase.com. The code is STU.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
I want to bring in Dan Andros. He's managing editor at CBN News and host of CBN's Quick Start podcast, which you can subscribe to now wherever you get your podcasts. Dan, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me, Stu.
Appreciate it. It's an interesting thing I want to talk to you about today. You brought this up to me off the air, and it's a concept we've discussed, and I've never heard named before. Someone at Fox Business was calling it the pop-up nonprofit shell. And I, you know, as a person who just loves watching scams develop, I love this stuff for some reason. I don't like that it's my money going toward it.
No.
But it is a fascinating scam. Can you kind of take us in on the ground floor here?
Yeah. I mean, the reporting is essentially this, that the Democrats and sort of progressive aligned individuals within politics are sort of setting up these nonprofits. And then the government will rush a bunch of money to them, and then nobody knows what's going on with it. So For example, this one called Justice Climate Fund. They received $940 million. They have no IRS tax filings, no clear leadership information. Another one, Power Forward Communities, received $2 billion despite reporting only $100 in revenue from the previous year. So you wonder what's going on here, and it sure looks like what's happening is because Harris and Biden funneled this money quickly, about $20 billion to all these different groups, and it was part of this EPA climate fund, which people have labeled this thing a slush fund. It was $370 billion allocated from the Inflation Reduction Act, which is really going to cut down on inflation, Stu, here by taking hundreds of billions of dollars of taxpayer money here and just funneling it to like the Solyndras of the world that just, they get funded, they throw up some solar panels, and then it goes bankrupt once they can't fund it anymore. It's just, it's sure looks like an episode of American Greed boiling right here.
It really does. And I like American Greed, and this is why I like the story so much. It's, it's a fascinating scam. Might very well be legal, we should point out, within the constraints of the law. By the way, this is why you don't pass laws like the Inflation Reduction Act. But you mentioned the $2 billion going to this climate forward, justice forward, backward, whatever it was, fund. That is the one that
power forward. Power, we got to get that power. The power. Here's the power. We got to
push it forward. We
get forward.
Power forward. Exactly. It's an interesting concept. Every one of these, by the way, sounds the same. I'm using them interchangeably because there's about 40 of these organizations, and they all have the exact same weird climate related forward.
Just picture, like, it's like the same three guys in a room. They're like, I don't know. Just put it in ChatGPT. Give me another name. Same things.
I need 10 more options for. The one, the $2 billion one, was Stacey Abrams associated charity. And this is an important part of this scam. It's not just taking money and dumping it toward, causes. Things that they like, causes that they appreciate. I mean, that would be honestly bad enough for me. But again, the law was at least supposed to address the environment. The key thing is placing these people who are associated with them, that have helped them, that are their buddies, whatever the arrangement is, to let them run these organizations. Because you'd think when you have a situation, if you really care about the environment, right? You do a lot of research and you diligently look through all these organizations and find the ones that are really doing good in your eyes. None of these organizations are like that. These are organizations that have accomplished literally nothing. $100.
Barely existed. I mean, this is the one that the Fox reporter Elizabeth McDonald was kind of detailing in an ex post. This is what she writes. Harris and Biden's EPA chief gave $7 billion to the suddenly created Climate United Fund in April 2024. It had launched 5 months earlier. And it had, its tax return showed $547,000 in revenue. And it spent $451,000 of that, of their $547,000, in just 2 months in 2023, a quarter of that on legal fees. And the majority mysteriously blown on no one knows what, because since tax returns won't stay. And then they get $7 billion. I mean, this is like, it's essentially the progressive left's version of Bada Bing, right? Like they just made a Bada Bing and then they just put the money in there. And then you just make that money have one or two extra stops and it's harder to track.
Yeah.
I mean, they're filtering money. That's all they're doing.
Yeah, it's amazing. Let me give you some other examples as well that are very similar. Biden EPA gave a social justice group $20 million to replace lead pipes and restore wetlands. The group has experience with neither. This is another amazing one. It's let's see if I can find the name here real quick. A Democracy Green. Now, it has green in the title, which is about their only qualification. This is, and it goes through the Climate Justice Community Change Program. Again, same thing, tight people that were, working with Biden, friends of the campaign, friends of these progressive causes, $20 million. I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, maybe they'll take the lead pipes and put them in the wetlands. Maybe that's how those things are associated. I'm not exactly sure. But generally speaking, same exact pattern.
Yeah, it is. And it kind of feel like, but I think two things when I think this. One, it's incredibly frustrating that our tax money is essentially being allowed to be used as a progressive slush fund to pay back favors of people that they like for one reason or another. And it's a clear attempt to try to conceal what the money is actually being used for. And then my second thought is like, how come, you know, I can't get into one of these groups? It's like, remember the movie War Dogs?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's like they figured out this loophole to like, I don't know, they figured out how to win all the government contracts on the gun, even though they had no idea on how to do any of this stuff and to like get the weapons to all the people that were supposed to get it. And they were just winning these humongous contracts. I'm not actually saying I want to commit fraud, but what I'm saying is just like, you just wonder who this is attracting, right? When they're like, you know what, it'd be a great idea. Let's just create this little thing here. Call it Climate Action Justice Superpowers Activate, and we'll just get $1 billion. I mean, it's just... It's shady. It's incredibly shady.
Very true. Let me give you one more example, because I want to come back to your question there. What kind of person does this attract? But Biden awarded $28 million to a mysterious vaccine company, which was run by his COVID advisor, right, his buddy. And it was based out of a Maryland post office box. They have seemingly no qualifications, no achievements as a company, just kind of a brand new thing. It's literally so non-creative, they named it Vaccine Company.
Like, you're not even trying at that point.
They're not even trying at that point. And so let me come back to your question before, because I think there's an answer to this.
Okay.
Which is, if there's a problem with our election cycles, right? All these people come together and they all come together and work for Joe Biden, you know, hundreds of thousands of people across the country, all these activist groups, they do all this stuff. And then they go to this election period and they lose. And so all this money is going to dry up for the elections, because none of these people can get roles in the government. Like, they all were thinking, OK, we'll win this election, then I'll go work in the EPA. But they're not going to get any of those jobs now. And they have to have a place to stash these people, because if they go and get real jobs, they might not be back in 4 years. But instead, you put them in these sort of shells where people can get paid giant salaries to do absolutely nothing. They're willing to basically work for your movement the entire time, and then they can be activated to come back into the campaign for you when 2028 comes. It's like a place, and we saw that, you know, back in the day, Dan, you worked with the Blaze for a long time, back in the day with Van Jones, right? He'd be a big activist and he'd get tossed out. He'd go to, you know, a university or some think tank, and he'd get these big salaries, and he'd still be doing a lot of the same work, but outside of the government. Same thing's happening here. He's stashing thousands and thousands and thousands of people for the movement and getting us to pay for all of them.
It's like, it's the literal definition of the swamp. I mean, it is exactly the swamp. We just keep the swamp festering with our little parasites here, and then we activate them when we're ready. I mean, it's everything that's wrong with the system. And some of these ones have popped up in recent years. In months, but I'm sure this is not a new phenomenon in Washington, D.C. I mean, one of the names, by the way, I mean, remember, who was put in charge of this slush fund, Stu? John Podesta. All of us with a Glenn Beck background learned about John Podesta a long time ago. This guy was, you know, working hand in hand with all the crazy donors, you know, the Soroses of the world. He was definitely connected with all of those groups, and that this is what progressives do. They're the inventors of all these ridiculous groups. So we used to make fun of it back in the day when they first started popping up, all of them. I mean, Hillary Clinton bragged about creating Media Matters. This is just what they do. This is how they think you're supposed to run things, is by just creating these groups. And it's actually worse than I thought it was. I thought they just, well, they really believed in these stupid causes and thought that Media Matters was really going to make some massive difference in the world to their causes. But it's actually worse than that. They set these things up so they can do exactly what you're saying, shuffle their people through and through. It's like their version of like the Catholic Church when they're not firing all these pedophile priests, you know, like when they had a rash of those. It's like they would just shuffle them to the next parish. Get these people out of here. But instead, that's the system we have. And it's hopefully this shining a light on it actually puts an end to this thing. But
yeah, I mean, I think the interesting part is there's two kind of ways to approach this. Obviously, shining a light on it has got to be part of it. But like, you could try to hold some of these people responsible. Maybe there was a crime committed. Maybe you can make an example out of one of these people so this stuff stops. But I think that the problem is actually bigger than that, in that like, this seems to me to be pretty legal. It's yeah. very corrupt, but it's legal. And so like, the real alarm bells go off to say, hey, like, this is a part of the system. The people in the system believe this is a feature, not a bug. And unless you pass a law really cracking down on this and go after it on both sides, it is going to be a massive problem going forward. Let me give you the last word here, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, maybe, like you said, we look at these laws, but I mean, maybe things like making the standard for what gets approved as like a 501c3. Maybe you look at those and you can't just slap anything on and there it goes. And then you magically get approved. Like, maybe there's got to be a stricter process. All of the things that we've been doing for the last several decades that have led to the swamp. I mean, I think Trump's been doing that in this administration so far, but those are the sorts of things that have to be really rethought. And like, how do you undo all of this? But it's easier said than done, because it's, you know, it's like turning the Titanic around. It's a massive thing.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it just puts us in a really shaky thing. I will say, Congress could do their job and say where this money's supposed to go in the law. That right. is an option. They could do that instead of just saying, here's $300 billion, give it out as needed. That well, is the fundamental problem.
And that's the problem with the swamp, is that it happens on both sides. Like, you yeah, have these bureaucrats on both sides, which is why it hasn't been called out until this point.
Well, let's do it now. Dan Andros, managing editor at CBN News. Be sure to check him out on CBN's Quick Start podcast. You can head over there and subscribe today. Dan, appreciate it, man.
All right. Thanks, Stu.
Got a bunch of other news to get to in only a couple minutes to do it, so let me go quickly. John Fetterman criticizing Democrats over unhinged petulance at Trump speech. Obviously, this is the Al Green escapade, among other things. It's interesting. Someone posted today, hey, you know, like, Gavin Newsom was out there, you know, test driving. All of a sudden, he doesn't want girls or boys in women's sports and, you know, all these, like, obviously insane positions the left has had forever. He's all of a sudden coming out of opposition. This is obviously previewing a 2028 presidential run. I don't think anybody buys it from Gavin Newsom, but that candidate who does those things could be a danger to Republicans. It's kind of like Fetterman in a different package. If you could get that, it could be some kind of scary for whoever's running in 2028. So something to keep an eye on. Trump preparing to sign order to dismantle the Education Department. And this is something that's been promised since Reagan. It was eventually brought in and put over the finish line to codify it by the Congress later on after it was created. Trump is going to try to do everything he can within the executive to reverse it, although he can't completely eliminate it that way. Hamilton is canceling its Kennedy Center run over Trump's takeover because, you know, art is only for people you agree with, I think, or something. Also, I wouldn't mind if you canceled all the Hamilton showings. In fact, all plays. All musicals gone. Totally fine with that as well. And remember the big February 28th economic blackout? Yes, this was the big piece of the resistance. They were going to stop buying things. And what was the big effect of that? Well, they're looking back now and they found nothing. None doesn't show anything. The only thing it actually shows is Amazon made more money. So I guess people didn't go to stores and they ordered more from Amazon. So you know who really loves the resistance? Jeff Bezos. Don't you love games? Well, the Federal Reserve is playing a game of will they or won't they with interest rates. And, you know, who gets stuck in the middle of that? You, obviously. Whether rates stay high or drop, the housing market is still a roller coaster, and buying or selling a home right now is about as nerve-wracking as it gets. That's why you got to find the right real estate agent. You got to work with the best agent in your area. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com connects you with the top-selling agents around you, and these are experts who know how to navigate the housing market. They know how to get the best deal. They know how to close that deal. This is not a hobbyist. This is not someone who does it part-time. This is a full-time professional who knows how to win. If you're thinking about buying or selling a home, don't wait. Get the right agent on your side today. It's going to make the whole process so much better for you. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com is the place to go. The name kind of says it all. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. It's a free service for you. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons. Oder Anna? Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil.
Satoshi Nakamoto, the inventor of Bitcoin, could be one of the richest people on Earth. But many years ago, Satoshi had disappeared, and with Bitcoin being woven into the fabric of the financial system, solidifying its role as digital gold, perhaps the question of Satoshi's identity was more pressing than ever.
What indication do you have that he was collaborating with the government?
If you dig deep enough, the inconsistencies will emerge.
Seems like he's responding.
I've been told Satoshi was a group of people.
I have to be careful of talking about that topic.
He checks a lot of boxes.
I will admit, you're pretty creative. You come with some crazy theories.
Here's what I think happened.
It's Bitcoin. Don't trust, verify.
I'm joined now by Colin Hoback. He is the documentary filmmaker and director of the new HBO original documentary, Money Electric, The Bitcoin Mystery, which is available to stream right now on Max. Colin, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Hey, good to be here again.
Yeah, I appreciate it. We were thinking back, it was 2013 was the first time you were on the show, and it was about your documentary, Terms and Conditions May Apply. We had
That's
you on.
Right.
Yeah, it's been a long time. We also had you on for your Cue Into the Storm documentary, both of which are great. And I'd encourage you to go back and do some viewing of that if you missed both of those. But you kind of have this thing where you go into these dark corners of the internet and try to solve mysteries. And you're doing that here with your new documentary. Is that kind of what inspired you to go down this road?
Yeah, I mean, it's the intersection of the internet and reality, right? So a big part of what we're trying to do here is do forensics online and then follow those forensics into the real world, see where they lead. You know, because what you see on the internet can only take you so far. So with this one, this is one of the greatest mysteries that the internet has ever known. Who created Bitcoin? And after Q Into the Storm, where we, I think, exposed the forces behind QAnon, you know, in this project, we wanted to get to the bottom of who had created Bitcoin. What were their intentions? Are they still alive? And if they are, what are the ramifications of that? You know, this is someone who could become the richest person on Earth.
Yeah, you're talking about, you know, Bitcoin has a market cap, I think it's something like $1.4 trillion right now. It's up over 70,000 again.
Yeah.
It really is amazing. And I don't know. I mean, I think I live in a world where, you know, people who commit the smallest of crimes get caught for their internet searches, right? Like, we find out everything about people because they leave this digital trail. It's just fascinating that Satoshi, you know, it's just not known who this guy is. I mean, how, it's so incredible. Is that kind of what made you just go down? I got to try to find the answer to this question.
Yeah, I mean, I got into Bitcoin in 2017. One of the things that really attracted me to it was the problem that it was trying to solve. Mm. And it's something that I've cared about for years, which is digital privacy. And it was trying to be cash for the internet. It was trying to bring the experience of being able to transact anonymously online. I think the film shows that it didn't quite succeed at that. There's some workarounds, but it ended up representing something a little closer to digital gold. And then there's this question of Satoshi, you know, and this is someone who I think we make a pretty strong case in the film, did what they could to dust their tracks. But we start playing cat and mouse with a couple of the key figures. And I think what you see happened is that this anonymous figure couldn't really continue developing Bitcoin anonymously. And they make this shift into the real world, but then do a lot of things to muddy their tracks. And there's this question of, you know, does someone who's worth potentially that much money deserve privacy, or should the public know who this is? You know, and I think if Satoshi had just mic dropped, and said, "Good luck, have a great time with my invention. I'm not going to be involved anymore. I'm never going to touch this stash." That would be one thing. It's a very different story if Satoshi stuck around, was continuing to develop Bitcoin, and may in fact even be driving this global effort to make Bitcoin the new standard.
I mean, it is interesting though that, as you point out, you know, maybe the most wealthy person in the world, I mean, right now at current valuations would be at least in the top 10. And they have not touched that stack. They got 1.1 million Bitcoin sitting here. They've never moved it. If it did happen, it would be immediately noticed. I mean, if that person is still alive and maybe the, you know, some, one of the people that you think might be responsible for this, like what explains that? Why wouldn't they do that?
So first off, this stash that we know is Satoshi's, or we believe is Satoshi's, that was revealed by a bug in Bitcoin's code in 2013. There's a technical thing that a researcher found, but it exposed a pattern. This is called the Patoshi pattern. And this is how we know more or less that Satoshi mined certain coins, and you can tell if they're Satoshi's coins that have moved. However, there's no reason to believe that these are the only coins that Satoshi ever mined. How many old computers you have sitting around? In the beginning, it was very easy to mine Bitcoin. You just needed to set up another computer, any computer, you know. It didn't take much to be able to do some mining. So I think that there's lots of reasons to believe that Satoshi had coins that didn't follow this pattern and would have continued mining after 2013, presuming they're still alive. I think there's a lot of evidence that suggests that as well. So I think you'll find this fascinating. Just, I think it was 6 days ago now, some of the earliest coins that were ever mined, it was only 5 days actually after Bitcoin's initial launch. This is January of 2009. Those coins just moved and were sold on an exchange. We're talking over $9 million worth of coins. Wow. This is unprecedented. And I think it's in reaction to the film.
Huh, that's really, I hadn't heard that. That's fascinating. We obviously don't know who is doing this. Is there any speculation as to what the reason is? You think it's just because they saw your film and like, oh, they're on our tracks and we need to start moving these things and take advantage of this now?
I think there's a good reason to believe that this is a reaction to the film. We're talking about a very large sum of money. We've never seen a move like this happen before. The closest thing actually was just in the run-up to the release. And prior to that, it had been almost a decade since anything had moved that was mined, say, within the first month. But for coins to move that were mined within 5 days of Bitcoin's launch, that's truly unprecedented. And it's hard not to see that as a reaction to the release of the film Money Electric itself.
That's interesting. So walk me through the process of making this documentary. Two things really fascinated me here. Let me start with this one. I don't want to give away anything that happens in the documentary because you got to watch it and experience it, I think, to really like go through all the steps. But like you kind of come up with an idea of a person you think is Satoshi. Like you come to a 100% conclusion in your mind, but pretty close to it. And you're talking to this guy and others around him throughout the entire film. How do you even get these people on camera?
That was one of the things that you ask yourself at the beginning. You know, is someone like Satoshi or someone like the guy who's behind Q, would they go on camera? And what I've come to realize is that I think there's a certain psychology to being behind a world-changing movement that you spearheaded anonymously. You kind of want the world to know. You kind of want credit. But at the same time, how do you take that credit? And also, if you fooled the whole world for so long, why wouldn't you be able to fool some guy holding a camera? So I think they maybe enjoy the cat and mouse aspect of it a little bit. And they think, oh, gosh, if I appear on camera and maybe I say something like I am Satoshi, they just simply won't suspect me. And I think the guy that we point to in this film, he's a master of game theory. He has an excellent strategy. And you'll see that over the years, he's very effectively muddied the waters. So I think maybe also he just didn't look me up before before he appeared on camera.
The other thing I was watching this, like, the documentary is an interesting story, even if it didn't come to a conclusion. But like, without a payoff at the end, like, it, you know, it's a different movie. When you go into something like this, do you go into it knowing, or are you working through this kind of how it appears in the film?
Our process is very much how it appears in the film. The twists and turns, you know, who I think it is for some amount of time because of where the evidence is pointing, you know, this cryptographer named Adam Back. But then at some point I realized, okay, well, if he's not covering up for himself, who might he be covering up for? And you just go back and you keep doing research. I mean, we spent 3 years researching this thing. We looked down every imaginable rabbit hole. And the only thing that's really not represented in the film would be that incredible body of research. We just focus on kind of the key things that I think the audience needs to know to be able to understand this mystery. Because we made this more for general audiences than for people who are really, really well-informed in the space. Of course, we could have made a four-hour series, I think, going into all of the evidence and how we land on where we land. Wish we could have done that, yeah. But I also think it's a better ride this way.
Speaking of general audience versus, you know, crypto nerds, you have it's an interesting part of the documentary where you talk about the split between Bitcoin and what winds up being Bitcoin Cash, right? And
that's right.
That debate was a big thing in the crypto circles back in the day. And you kind of, you seem to take a position of liking that Bitcoin Cash approach, which was more about maybe transactions than the digital gold. I mean, do you see like the future here? Do you come away with an opinion as to whether, you know, both of these things have a role? What is your take on that?
Well, I think at the heart of that debate was this question of how do you make Bitcoin function like cash? On one side, you had cryptographers, and I think like Adam Back, you had this company Blockstream, you had Peter Todd. You had folks who strongly believed that Bitcoin should not sort of fundamentally be changed. At least over time, that was what that's what their kind of position was. I think in the beginning it was much murkier. Not everyone really understood how to solve this problem. And there's this real split that forms in the community, those who want to change the quote unquote block size and those who do not. And want to make Bitcoin kind of always stay the same. Because if you make a change, it creates a hard fork and then you have two competing currencies. So this is a concern. And I think that both sides have valid arguments, but in the long run, you know, it's hard to exactly pick a side. You know, as they say in the film, Victor writes history. Bitcoin itself did not fundamentally change. Those solutions have been built kind of around Bitcoin, something like the Lightning Network, which allows you to buy coffee in a place like El Salvador, right? And Bitcoin Cash also exists, but it's just not really used.
Yeah, it's true. But there have been some solutions. But it was an interesting debate and a really interesting documentary. If you don't know anything about Bitcoin, you can watch it and go through the entire thing. Or if you're a crypto nerd, you're going to love this stuff too. Colin Hoback, it's the new documentary. It's HBO original, Money Electric, the Bitcoin Mystery. It's available to stream right now on Max. Be sure to check it out. It's an incredible ride. Colin, great to see you, and thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Yeah, hope to see you again in 3 years.
All right. Okay, so here's what happened. Guy goes into a mall, and then, you know, as he's going through the mall, he goes into a jewelry store and wants to see some high-end jewelry. Now, they don't just, even in, you know, a mall jewelry store, they're not just going to take out the stuff that's, you know, worth six figures for anybody. He, however, claims to be a representative for a basketball player, an NBA player from the Orlando Magic, and says, hey, I'm thinking about buying this stuff. I want to examine this. So they take him to, like, a private room, and they take out the jewelry, and this stuff is really, really expensive. And he's acting a little bit weird. He's got gauze on his face, which is kind of strange. And then he kind of gets up and they kind of think this something's going on. He then takes the diamond earrings and eats them. Now, that's not typical of a jewelry store customer, just so in case you're not aware. Now he's been arrested. $770,000 of diamonds, Tiffany earrings, he just swallowed them. And they're in his belly now. This is where they live. Actually, when they said $770,000, I thought we were going to see like his entire belly filled with diamonds. No, it's just the diamond earrings. He did get caught, unfortunately, on the camera by one of the officers asking, am I going to be charged with what's in my stomach? That's just never a good question.